The Gospel according to St. Mark. As Jesus came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." This is the Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. You know, in today's gospel, at the beginning there, when the disciples gaze upon the temple in Jerusalem, and what a magnificent building it must have been, they see permanence. What large stones and what large buildings. You know, Jesus, the one they suspect just might be the one to make everything right again by claiming his authority over the temple, Jesus shortly bursts their bubble. Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down. Quickly becomes obvious that the restored temple will not be the epicenter of his work. Not only that, but truth will be shaken, the world will be scorched by war, and it'll be rumbled by competing kingdoms as nations jostle for power, and every ruler and his uncle claim that they are the one to save the world. There will be earthquakes and famines. And Jesus says, "This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." Jesus' teaching about the temple fits with his words about where we place our treasure. Other places in the gospel, he has a warning about moths and robbers. Now, what is of ultimate value in God's grand scheme of things? Whether we want to admit it or not, God usually has bigger things in mind than what we desire for our comfort and our convenience. Our limited human minds can only glimpse pieces of the big picture of God working out his plans for human, even cosmic history. Ultimately, while our work in the kingdom is on this earth, our hope is not here, our hope is in heaven. Our Lord works in mysterious ways, and we can't always know the import of our acts and our sacrifices and our lives. Things fall apart, even crafted and precious things. We fail at times, and yet even failure can be woven into the greater work of God. You might say that's small comfort when it's our temple that the Lord is predicting will be thrown down. It's our offerings that built it. Our hopes and dreams are in this place, splotched with our sweat. And weren't we merely doing what God required of us? No, our present experience in 2018 is a time, as we all know, in which the church in general and its activities are not as highly valued as in previous decades. There are some social scientists who label our present age as an age of post-Christendom, post-Christianity. And this was not the future that St. John's and so many, many congregations imagined and built toward. So the question is, what now? And Jesus says this is but the beginning, what we're experiencing now, of the birth pangs. Something is being brought to birth. And it's especially, as mothers here can say, birth is not a painless experience. In the eternal fruitfulness of God's, the plans that God has for God's people are for good. They're not for destruction. And the reading from Hebrews, our second lesson today, says that what we're to do in the meantime while we're experiencing all this, we are to hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering. We provoke one another to love and good deeds. We do not neglect to meet together. We encourage one another, especially as we see the day of the Lord approaching. After all, we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. You know that God is bringing something new to birth. May at times seem confusing and almost contradictory to what we experience. But there are signs around us of God's good work, though not perhaps always in the places that we previously sought permanency. What was, was. And now new things are being birthed by the renewing Spirit of God. They're in continuity with God and with God's plans. They just not might always look like what we had hoped. Now, I don't like disillusionment any more than any of you do. I'll keep my well-built illusions, thank you very much. But in its true aspect, disillusionment can be a gift, if a hard one, because it's literally the undoing of our illusions, the unwinding of our false images of God and of life, of what we're owed, of who we are. Disillusionment is an antiseptic rinse for our false selves and idols. Disillusionment can usher us into a space where we have a chance to reconsider, to come to a fresh perspective on who God is and who we are in relationship with God. As I said before, I don't like it, but I'm convinced that sometimes we need a good old-fashioned swig of bracing disillusionment. Now, I know that I have sometimes needed to be disillusioned so that God could freshly configure my life around God's kingdom. My wife Judy and I, we had big dreams for our life after our kids had grown up and graduated from college and would be out on their own. There were two parts to that dream. The one was pretty natural, get those kids through college and get them out on their own. The second one, once we no longer had to be tied to a local school and then have all that, if it seemed that the time was right in the congregation I was serving, we would go south for another call. We had lived in Howell for 13 years at that point when our second child graduated from college. And the first part of that dream happened right on schedule. They both graduated from college in 4 years each. And they moved on in their planned career path. They did not come home and live with us. And so they were out on their own, just as we had planned from our son's birth 25 years earlier. As I said, the other part of that dream was to seek one more congregational call. And that was to be in a warmer place where 40 inches of snow and icy roads and sidewalks are not the norm during the wintertime. And God seemed to be cooperating with our dreams. I still remember the summer afternoon, we were sitting on our back porch. The phone rang. I answered the phone, and I was surprised to hear on the other end a college and seminary friend who had recently been elected bishop of the Southeast Synod of the ELCA. That synod centered in Atlanta, Georgia. And after we exchanged pleasantries about how our families were doing, he got right to the point of his call. He said he needed pastors with my experience and skills in Georgia. And he asked if I was open to an interview down there. Wow. Was there any doubt? Surely we and God were on the same page on this one. A year later, I had had two interviews. The first was by Skype, and that's an experience in itself. And then the second flew to Augusta, Georgia. Neither one led to a call. I was in the deliberations. They each informed me that please don't do anything else. You're second on our list. And we'll see what happens with the person that was first. But neither of those calls materialized. And about that time, Bishop Wall, who was here in Michigan, he was my bishop here, he thought maybe there was a congregation here that needed me and my unique skills and experience. And so there was an interview, and out of that process, a call came. But after much prayer and personal wrestling with God, I chose not to accept that call. And as I see the history of that congregation and what's happened with the pastor who they did call, that was the right decision for me and for them. And Bishop Warren did not get out of the picture. He called again, and he said, I know these first two that didn't work out, but I've got some more congregations in Georgia and Mississippi that I know that you can serve well. So our dream was alive. Except that it turns out that God needed me in ways I had not anticipated elsewhere. I still remember it was the Monday of the week before Christmas, 1996. I just returned from Illinois. My father had died that year, and the funeral was the week before. I was getting back, and I had to get all fired up because Christmas was the end of the week. I had to write my Christmas Eve sermon. That was all disrupted by my father's death. That took a whole week out of December. And the phone rang as I was getting in the office that morning to start on final Christmas preparations. It was the bishop from the Indiana-Kentucky Synod. And he said that he saw me after he'd read my profile, my pastoral profile, he saw me as a good match with the congregation that had been without a pastor for 2 years. He also commented that he knew that we hoped to move south, and he wanted to affirm that this congregation was south, 15 miles south of the Michigan border in Goshen, Indiana. We scheduled an interview. Judy went along and sat in on that interview. And I still remember driving home after that. It was a cold, starry, clear January night. For much of that 4-hour drive home into the wee hours of the morning, Judy was crying. Her lament, Goshen is not far enough south. But it's also very obvious that the pastor they need, your gifts, what you can bring, it's a good match. But she went on, I still don't want to leave my job that I enjoy and still have to live through snowy winter. If you know anything about Goshen, it's where It's kind of on the edge of the snow belt in Indiana, but the wind blows down Lake Michigan and South Bend, and that area gets dumped on a lot in the winter. She was right about how God was working in this whole thing, because God knew that my unique spiritual gifts were what Trinity needed at that time. I did accept God's call to serve there, and I was there for 10 years. And I think I can honestly say that based upon the comments and the discussion that we had in the exit interview process when I retired, those 10 years of ministry were a testimony to God's wisdom and His oversight and His role in this whole thing, in the big picture, not mine or Judy's. So disillusionment never loses its bite or its relevance for me. But a little disillusionment goes a long way. We may need to be disillusioned at times, but we also need to remember that the gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. Now, later on in the chapter from Mark that we read from today, Jesus says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." Nor, as Paul reminds us in Ephesians, nor will his church pass away. Christ's direction in history has been cast and will not be altered. Our hopes and dreams, like the building blocks of the temple, or like our vision of moving to the south, our hopes and dreams may come tumbling down, but God will still be in charge, working through us or around us if necessary, to bring to completion His plan of salvation for all the world. Hold tight to Jesus' promise. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Amen.